Hello and welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor. Today on the show, we have Marshall Friedman. He joined Jake and Gino almost 4 years ago and has since amassed a portfolio of over 700 units that include multifamily, RV parks, and mobile homes. He's currently the CFO of a group of managed service companies where he oversees cash flows, operations, and strategic investments. Welcome to the show, Marshall.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's great to be here, and it's good to see you again, Gino.
Marshall, I'm excited. I usually don't get this excited, this giddy in the beginning of the call, but as I was getting ready for the show, I was reflecting upon that, want to call it fateful conversation we had. I was in my office in my house, and I'm walking around, and Josh, team member, says, hey, I've got this guy that I want you to talk to. He's really high level. He's got a great job, but he's scared about pulling the trigger. And I get on the phone, and it's Marshall. Walk us through what you were going through almost 4 years ago. It's been a long time. You talk about your background, the great job you had, the possibilities with that job, but you're getting burned out and saying, I just want to reset. I want to do something different with my life.
Yeah. So it was pretty wild. It was pretty wild. So, I mean, I still think about it, and I remember how horrifying that really felt at the time. And I'm fortunate enough to have a wife who was super into real estate investing, at least the idea of us doing it. And she just kept saying, do it. Come on, do it. And I'd be like, should I? Because every night I'd go home and I'd be like, should I really do this? This is really scary. And she'd be like, yes, do it. And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, that probably persisted for a while. But what really happened was we were selling a podcasting company, and I started listening to podcasts, learning more about the business we were selling. And then I had never really listened to podcasts before, but I started listening to other podcasts and then kind of chased this rabbit hole of finance, investing, and then real estate, and then multifamily. And I was just kind of, I kept kind of chasing the things that I thought were interesting and that resonated with me. And all of a sudden, it just kind of hit me. I just said, holy crap, this makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I'm seeing the population changes that people are talking about. I understand the cash flows. I understand the tangible assets. I understand how the debt works. And I started reading books and learning more and more. And then eventually I was just like, you know, I've always wanted to own something. I've always wanted to run something and build something. I was in New York at the time. I was in investment banking. I was working hours that were just pretty wild. And I was in this massive skyscraper building where we lived, and I just look out and be like, I always think every time I travel anywhere, I look at buildings and I just sigh and I think someone owns this. Like somebody owns this stuff and they're collecting rents. And how does that work? And so that was kind of the initial push. I mean, we had an awesome view because we're on the 42nd floor and just looking at buildings all the time. Just always thinking like someone's owning this stuff. How can I own something like this? And so I started listening to podcasts. I figured out that it was multifamily that I was really interested in. I started looking at different groups. The first podcast I listened to was another group. I remember I called them up, and I basically was asking for referrals. They sent me to their website. There were a bunch of crappy, honestly, referrals that were there. I was not interested. I started doing a little bit more research, and I landed on Jake and Gino. And then I started making some phone calls. I really liked who I was speaking with. And then I spoke with you. I had told you about a deal that I was looking at. We looked at it together over the phone. That was for a deal in Tennessee. Ended up, got really close on that one, but the owners decided to end up keeping it. That one actually probably would have been an amazing deal. But the owners ended up keeping it. So yeah, eventually what happened was I said, you know what, I've got the knowledge, I have everything in place, I'm ready to try and pull the trigger and just take the leap. And so that was actually horrifying. So I remember going and knocking on my group co-head's door to tell him, hey, I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice. Mentally, I was prepared to get laughed out of the room and just tell them to leave, like that right then and there. I had no idea how they were going to react. Instead, the opposite happened. The guy who I was talking to in particular said, you know, my brother does this kind of stuff. This stuff's really awesome. You can do really well with it. He said, I'm very excited for you, actually. And I was like, that's awesome. And he was like, but how about you stay a little bit longer? And I was like, I don't know. I mean, I've already kind of lined up everything. I've done the road trip. I already picked out where I was going to move. And that's another story we can talk about in a minute. But I kind of had everything lined up and in my head was kind of ready. And he said, okay. And he's like, why don't you stay until this was in May or June. And he said, why don't you stay through October? And I was like, that's really far away. I don't know about that. And he said, we have a bonus that pays out in November. Then I might as well stay through November. And that's really far away. And he said, okay, how about you stay through November? We reduce your work hours to a 9 to 5 and then you collect your bonus and then you can do whatever you want. And I said, that sounds amazing. So I had several months in the New York lifestyle with a 9-to-5 investment banking job, which is crazy, but was incredible because it gave me time to read more and learn more. Because he said in the afternoons and the evenings, you can go home and you can learn more about real estate. And I was like, this is perfect.
And then let me ask you,
yeah.
You end up going to November and you're looking at all the research and then you finally end up making that move. What is the one thing that stood out to you looking from the outside in when you finally joined? What's one thing, maybe one limiting belief, one thing you thought you knew but was completely shattered once you joined the community? Is there anything that stands out?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's all about the partnerships and sort of what you need and who is there. And so for me, I definitely knew I was going to need a lot of help and I did, and I still do. But I think there was definitely a little bit, I probably thought I needed fewer partners or the fewer people to work with. And it turns out, like, to me right now, even still today, the more the merrier in terms of who I'm working with, because the more people I work with, it means the more deal flow I can get. And because I can add value in many, many different ways. I don't have to add value in all of them. In order for a deal to make sense. And I actually have some pretty creative deals that we've done where I have, in some cases, I can run and control and do everything from soup to nuts for the deal. But there's other deals where I have just come up with a creative solution and I get a piece of the equity for it. So the different ways to get into the deals and to get started. And yeah, I mean, that was probably the biggest shock to me was just to realize that I always knew that I needed people, but I still do. And the teamwork to me is one of the most important factors.
And then when you look back at it, you have that fear. You have a supportive spouse. You're working ungodly hours. You're really afraid to take the plunge. Then you finally decide to take the plunge. What would you say to anybody listening to this that's sort of in your situation where they're doing a job they really don't like doing? They know that they want to do something else. They want to build something. You know, how did you get over that hurdle of overcoming that fear?
Yeah, I mean, I was at a point, I guess, for me personally, where I was ready to go. To me, investing, life, everything is all about risk and reward, and it's also about hedging those risks. And so to me, I looked back at my background and I said, you know, I've done all of this. If I explain to someone the path that I've chosen and why I've done what I've done, I could probably find another job. I was not expecting to hear that from the job that I left that those doors would be open to me to come back whenever I wanted either. I mean, I wasn't expecting that. In my mind, I was ready for them to tell me to leave and never see me again. But I still keep in touch with those guys and they invest in my deals too. So, I mean, it's very fortunate on that. I would say to anyone listening, hedge your risks. I mean, if you want to take the plunge, definitely do it. But make sure that have your ducks in a row. How much money do you need to live? Like, if all of a sudden you don't have an income, how long can you last on your own? Coming from investment banking, I had a little bit of a cushion where I could say, well, we can go for this long. If it doesn't work, I'll start looking for a job again. But at the same time, you also just have to be confident as well. And so it's if you want it bad enough, do it. But don't be stupid about it.
Mm-hmm. Proper planning prevents poor performance. I think with you, Marshall, and with everybody listening right now, if you're planning on doing it, it doesn't have to happen tomorrow or 6 months from now or a year from now. 2-3 years goes by so quick. If you start planning today, start creating that buffer, like Marshall said, start putting 6 months of expenses aside, start choosing the market, start building the team, start educating yourself, start picking the niche. When you're ready to do it, the market cycle is completely changed and you're in a different part of the market cycle, so don't start. Now, how did you pick the market where you moved to?
Yeah, so that was a great story. So basically what happened was I built a spreadsheet for myself and I had just listed, I knew it was going to be in the Southeast based off of what I was learning and seeing. I knew that population was moving there. I'm also from North Carolina originally, so that was not a difficult decision to make, but where in the Southeast, how and what, was not really sure. So what I literally did was I put together a spreadsheet and basically listed out all the different boom towns and then created a road trip for me and my wife. This was before I left the job. And so, yeah, somehow I was able to get a week off of vacation. And people were like, well, where are you going to go? I mean, that people always think you're going to go somewhere like the beach or the mountains or something. And I was like, I'm going on a road trip in the Southeast with my wife. And there, people were just like, oh, that's interesting. They didn't know that I was out doing some recon intel mission stuff, but people were just kind of like, that's interesting. I hope you have a good time kind of thing. So I went with my wife. We started off in Kentucky, drove down through, we were on our way through Tennessee and we were going to head to Nashville next. And then one of the Jake and Gino members reached out to me and said, hey, why don't you come down to Knoxville? I was like, Knoxville's not on my list. I don't really know. And he was like, yeah, just come down to Knoxville. You'll figure out, I mean, you can continue on your trip, but come to Knoxville. And I was like, okay, fine. So I went to Knoxville and had lunch And we basically were talking about it, and he was like, okay, so tell me about all of your boom towns and where you're heading to. And I told him all about the places from Kentucky to Tennessee to Alabama to Florida to Georgia to South Carolina and all the places we were going. And he was basically like, okay, yeah, that sounds perfect. Like, yeah, you're definitely hitting those boom towns. And I was like, yep. And he was like, okay, now, first of all, you're leaving your job and you're not going to have an income. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, so you probably want to live somewhere affordable. And I was like, yes, that's true. And he was like, well, Knoxville is a very, very cheap place to live. And I was like, touche, makes sense. And then he says, and then look where you are on a map. All of your boom towns are, most of your boom towns are within a 5-hour driving radius from Knoxville. So from Knoxville, I could hit the Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, other parts of Tennessee and Kentucky. And I was like, that's a great point. And he was like, yeah. And plus you'll have friends here. So come on down. And so for me, I mean, that made a lot of sense. I was able, I don't want to advertise anyone to necessarily do this in particular for this reason, but I was literally able to throw myself on folks' doorstep and be like, teach me what you're doing, because you can't turn away someone who's literally physically there either. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was the way to just dive headfirst into it. And if you are going to take the leap, by the way, don't leap with your putting your toe in your water. If you're going to do something, you have to do it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, for me, learning multifamily and doing all of this stuff, that was purely my focus. I mean, for a good 2.5 years, I did nothing but multifamily, real estate, networking, learning the ropes and getting a better understanding of it.
Marshall, that is important for everyone listening. The spreadsheet is sounds rudimentary, and Marshall's got an engineering brain. He's very analytical. But even for those of you that are emotional, sometimes write the pros and cons. Jake did the same thing. When Jake left New York in 2011, he simply created a place where he wanted warmer weather. He wanted no state income tax. He wanted really low property taxes. He wanted the cost of living, all of that. And then he sort of wanted to be closer to New York, so if he had to drive, because Jake is a wimp, he doesn't like to fly. So, you know, Knoxville checked all those boxes. He was looking in Texas. He was looking in Florida. He was like, Knoxville's the way to go. So as you're listening to this, what are you doing? You have to really figure out what your fears are. You have to overcome the fears. Hopefully you can get a supportive spouse on there. You really have to understand that it's a longer-term game. It's not going to happen overnight. And then start analyzing where you want to take that next step and start creating some type of nest egg for you to be able to do that. And these are all things that are pretty simple. But if no one's told you to do them, no one's laid them out for you like that, you don't know where to start. You feel overwhelmed. And a confused mind always says no. So if you're just thinking about 3 years from now and not really planning it out with your spouse or significant other, that's going to be very, very, very challenging. So you join Jake and Gino. You start meeting your partners in Jake and Gino. A lot of them are in Knoxville. Talk about that transition, how that worked.
Yeah, I mean, that was amazing. So I remember my first night in, I met with a bunch, literally the first night that we had gotten in and arrived with my wife, we went out with some of the Jake and Gino folks and just started talking about deals and things. And actually, I mean, how I got in the first deal was just ironic as well. So, I basically met up as much as possible with the Jake and Gino folks while I was there in Knoxville. I'd go, we'd look at deals together, I'd underwrite stuff. I was helping for free, or I'd bring questions or deals to them and vice versa. I mean, it was a very, very effective way to learn very quickly. Mm-hmm. And one of the coaches at Jake and Gino, I remember it was New Year's Eve, and I was sitting with maybe the day after New Year's, and I was sitting there with my wife, and I was like, oh, you know, I haven't reached out to this one coach in a long time. I haven't seen how he's doing. I'll check on him maybe tomorrow. And she was like, no, do it right now. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. It was weird. She was like, no, do it now. And I was like, oh, okay. So I sent a text message to one of the coaches, and he basically, it was just, I was happy New Year's. I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a great time, basically. And he got right back to me and said, hey, we've got a deal. Do you want to come in? And I was like, yep. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. It was ironic the way that that first deal all worked out. And that was our 49 unit in Johnson City that we bought to hold it forever, got yield maintenance debt, everything on it. It was going to be a cash flow hold forever. And here we are, well, 19 months after that, we sold it.
That's awesome. But listen, the irony is, it's not ironic though. You putting in the work, I mean, you actually taking that step forward saying, hey, how you doing? There's a lot that goes into it. A community can be only as great as the people that are in it. So if the people aren't willing to do the work, don't waste your time joining a community. That's the irony. People think, oh, I'm going to join it and it's just going to do work for me. No, you've got to go out there, put in the work. Because I know, Marshall, you've said you've constantly, the last 4 years, continued to make those relationships, continue to go out there, continue. And this is one of the things that I love about our community. It's the go-giver mentality, where people are just doing things and not really expecting anything in return. But they know ultimately, after you've done a couple of things, and I see your bracelet there, Make It Happen bracelet. I love the bracelet.
I still have it. Right? I still have it. And that's, I still wear it every day.
Yeah, you're making it happen for other people, and then ultimately that comes back to you and it reciprocates to you. Do you have one deal like that you could think of off the top of your head right now that said, oh, I really enjoyed this deal, or this is something I can teach the listener here about something that we did on one of these deals?
Yeah, sure. In terms of just things that I've learned or figured out during the deal, or just a favorite deal, or what?
Yeah, one of your favorite deals. You know, a deal that you may not even make money on it. You may have struggled and said, I really learned a lot on this deal. Or even an RV park deal, because I liked how you said you were in there for 2.5 years. You figured it out. You have the buy right criteria. You're conservative, because I like to say Jake and Gino saved my ass.com is more important than Jake and Gino's teaching people to buy deals, because no deal is better than a bad deal. I'd rather have people be conservative, not buy deals, buy the right deals when they come around. And that's the whole idea of mentorship and education, learning from others' mistakes. I've bought some bad deals, and that is the worst thing that you could possibly do. So if you're there working with coaches and working with people who have done it, they're going to tell you, that may not look great. Take a look at your underwriting, look it over. And I think that's the idea of what you're trying to accomplish when you are working with a mentorship group.
Yeah. So I'd say one of them definitely was the first deal. I mean, that we hit a real epiphany in that one that was interesting. I don't think it's a usual problem, but something that people can listen to and think about, because you can discover things everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So this was for the Landings. This was the deal in Johnson City, the 49 unit that was our very first deal that we started out with. And we had gotten down the road. We had gotten agency lending through Fannie. And basically what happened was, as we were getting down the road with that one, we realized we didn't have a whole lot of reserves. And Fannie had required us to put down a lot of reserves for them to hold until we made a very, very long laundry list of fixes. And once we were a percentage of the way through of that list, they would then release the money to us. Obviously, that was not in our business plan. And so we were kind of running through the first few months very, very lean. And I couldn't figure it out why. And it took me a long time. And I was like, why are they holding back so much? What is going on? And eventually I went through and ticked through the list. And I was like, wait a minute, 80% of what they're holding back is for the roofs. But these roofs are 3 years old. Why are they holding back? Why are they holding this much back from 3 years old? My partners were kind of agreed. And they said, yeah, that is weird. They said that we needed to replace a certain percentage of the roofs. And I was like, well, that doesn't make sense, because these roofs are relatively new. And so I dug more into that, and I was like, we need to call these guys up. This just doesn't make sense. They're holding literally back all of our CapEx budget because of new roofs that we currently have. I was like, this smells funny. This doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. We called them up, and sure enough, they had made a mistake on the age of, they misaged our roofs, and they sent all the money back. And all of a sudden we could make it rain like with cash flow. It was incredible, because all of a sudden our turns went way faster. Mm-hmm. And so that was a massive pivotal turning point in that deal. So that was pretty crazy.
And so you're looking at really the attention to detail, and they do make mistakes, and the pushback is huge. I need to ask you this question, because you've partnered up with a lot of people. When you're partnering up, what are you looking for in a partnership? And what do you need to bring to the partnership as well? Because I know we say values-based decision-making, and we're always looking for partners, but make sure you look in the mirror and make sure that you're the right partner, you're the right fit as well.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I always sell myself on being able to basically be doing anything that people want. The one thing that I really don't like doing, I've learned about myself through this whole process, I don't really like being the deal finder necessarily. I don't like calling up all the brokers. I don't like grinding through all of the sort of the initial grunt work of looking at a deal and doing the initial penciling. I mean, it takes a lot. It's great for learning, and I did that for a long time, because it taught me basically what to look for in underwritings and how to think about deals. But right now it's not my favorite part of the deal, and it takes up a lot of time, which I don't have. So I do basically everything else. I can help with the fundraising. I can help be a balance sheet partner. I always have to help mostly with the asset management. And I also want to check the underwriting as well, because that's my financial background. I want to be making sure that the numbers tick and tie and make sense. I want to make sure that we're operating efficiently. I love looking at basically at current operations and saying, ooh, does this make sense? Or what are we doing with our CapEx budget? And then is this appropriate, or should we be going left or right at this point? And so I really love that kind of aspect of the deal. So I always want to be at least a little bit involved in that, no matter what deal I do. So for me, I that's how I position myself is, hey, I've got this background. I like digging into the numbers. I can help operate. I can help raise. I can help with a lot of different things. And then for me, for what I'm looking for in partners is, yeah, exactly what anything I don't have. Also, anyone who can help me save time is very, very valuable to me. So bringing deals in, super valuable, especially if they're good ones, especially if they're off market or they look good. But if not, I mean, if they pencil it, it works. To me, it's always looking at good deals and having good deal flow. But partners, I mean, they also have to be very dependable. And one of the most basic things that I know that you say that has carried on with me, really actually probably changed me, like personally, like in how I think and do things. I mean, I was always a little bit this way, but I mean, once you kind of said it, if you really want to be taken seriously, you always have to say what you're going to do and then do what you say. Always. Always, 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 because that's the fastest way to build trust. And if you can build trust with someone, you all of a sudden become very valuable. And so partners have to be trustworthy. There's a lot of people that don't do that. And if you say you're going to do something and then don't do it, to me, it's like a one and done almost. Like that person said they were going to meet me at this time and they didn't show up. I mean, if you're going to be late or something, that's fine. Call or message in advance. But if there's some sort of no show, or if you say, hey, you're going to do something and doesn't happen, like, to me, that's a red flag.
I love that. And you're looking from within, you're looking in yourself first before you go challenge and find any partners. Make sure that you're dependable, make sure that you're a hard worker, make sure that you can provide value to the partnership. That's important. And it may be, hey, I'm the bird dog, I'm managing these properties, I'm going down hunting down brokers, giving them calls. There's value in that. Or hey, I can raise money, that's my skill. Or I can really be a great financial underwriter and I can help out with asset management. Like you said, that's another skill. Understand where your values derive from and then understand how you can have partners around you. And it really comes down to make sure that your goals align as well. If your partners want to fix and flip and you want to hold long term, not going to be a great partnership long term.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
What have you been able to do as far as any tips on scaling up? Because you went from zero to a collection of over 700 units in less than 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't really think of it as, honestly, I don't think of it as much as scaling up. I haven't done it. I haven't hired a team. I'm not vertically integrated. I haven't, honestly, like when I first started, I thought I was going to have my own podcast and my own website and do all this branding stuff. And honestly, I never did because I never really needed it. Mm-hmm. The thing for me is it's just been consistent. It's just been consistency and picking deals that look that make a whole lot of sense. And sticking to that and not really getting away from that. And that's really how it's happened.
Did that change though? Because I sort of changed for Jake and myself. We went down the syndication route. We love syndication. We've done three. We've sold two. We still have one left. And then I read the book called Small Giants. And I'm like, well, that's not for us. I don't want to have 20,000 units. I'd rather have 400 or 500 units per year plugging along. I'm doing really great. And we sort of pulled back on that. And now we're just buying deals internally. We're actually allowing our employees to invest with us. So, I mean, guess that you can call that sort of a syndication model as well. But we just had that epiphany a couple of years ago by doing a podcast with somebody, by Bo Burlingham. He had wrote the book Small Giants. I would challenge everybody to read that book. And if you aspire to great things, big things, great. What we wanted a company built on culture. We wanted to really have a great place where people came to work and we controlled everything, and we didn't want to outgrow our infrastructure. While everyone's out there putting 1,000, 2,000 units, we didn't want to scramble around. Since we are vertically integrated, it was challenging over the last couple of years to hire property managers. They're coming back, though. The market's starting to stabilize, so hiring is getting to be much better. So when did you have that epiphany, like, I don't need all this. I don't need the website. I don't need this podcast and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, it was because I mean, a lot of the reason that people have that is because they want to build an audience or build credibility. And I don't think, I think that stuff is important. And yes, you can increase your reach. And maybe in retrospect, maybe I could have done it. I don't know. But the thing is I have a long list of people who just over the years who I've met and just have conversations with, mm-hmm. trust in me and believe in me, and which is crazy. I mean, to me, like, that's the craziest thing. Like, I can't believe that people out there say, hey, we really trust and believe this guy. We're going to trust him with our money. Like, it's incredible, because, and then it becomes my goal to make them rich. Like, I'm like, you believed in me. I am going to make sure that you do not regret that decision. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that weighs very, very, very heavily on me. So for me, the investors and making sure that they get paid, is the most important thing, because you know what's going to happen if and when I do that? First of all, it's going to make me feel good because it makes them feel good, but they're going to tell all their friends and they're going to invest in more, and suddenly they've got money to invest in more deals. And so that's kind of the approach that I've been taking, and it's been pretty good so far. One thing I want to touch upon right here, and I know this is, you're going to agree with this, but a lot of people listening to this are going to maybe smile or disagree, I don't know. Doors. Let's talk about doors. A lot of people like to fixate on growing the number of doors, and people will ask, oh, well, how many doors do you have? Like, who cares? Who cares? I don't care about doors. I care about equity. I care about cash flow. I care about returns. That's what I care about. I can go tomorrow and put a dollar into a REIT and I'll have 1,000,000 doors, and then I'll go around like the world pounding on my chest saying, hey, I've got 1,000,000 doors. Who cares? I have a dollar in that thing. Like, that's not important. It's how you're able to scale and grow your equity and get cash flow. That is what's important.
I love that. It's the conveyor belt model theory, where you're putting things and you're trying to, Bill Hamm says it best. You don't make money when you buy real estate. You make money when you exit real estate. And an exit can be a cash out refi. It can be a sale, whatever that is. But you're pulling that equity out. And we use a metric, profit per unit. We like our PPU because that's how we're built. That's what we're looking for.
Exactly.
We're not fee-based. We're not looking just for asset. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what I'm saying. Get clear on your goals. And when you're younger, you're starting out, you may need to start out there because you don't have the equity. But as you're older, you may just want to do a couple of small deals, get some experience, and then, hey, jump into the syndication. It's just one tool in the toolbox, as we like to say. Syndication's amazing. Creative financing is amazing. JVing and partners is amazing. Doing deals by yourself, they're all different skills and techniques. Knowing when to utilize them and what part of the market cycle is going to make you a very successful investor. And I hope a lot of people do agree with us, because I think that is truly important. It doesn't matter whether you have 10,000 units or 1,000 units. How are they performing? And you know, like you said, can you get equity out of those deals? And are you cash flowing from them? That's really, to me, myself, truly important as well.
That's what it is. I when people come up to me and tell me, how many deals is important ish because it tells about your experience and your reps.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, but how did they perform? How what's the performance like?
I love that. Last question before we sign off. What would your life look like right now if you hadn't joined Jake and Gino and you were still in the investment banking world?
It would be very, very different. I mean, being in New York, being in investment banking, at least where I was, I did not see a good path to having a family there. I mean, mm-hmm. that was one of the reasons as well why I left, is because my wife and I were thinking about families, and being out of New York and not in investment banking seemed to make a lot of sense from that perspective. And I think that you talk about it all the time, the importance of having multiple streams of cash flow and revenue is awesome. Candidly, I have a job today, and I took that job because, one, I'm learning a lot about operating businesses and different things. But at the same time, it also, for me, it provides it adds to the stability for the family that I have now and healthcare and everything else. And a lot of people, to me, I was ready to quit all of that to learn. And now that I have that, I can do both. And to me, like, that's what's important, because I have both now, and it gives me confidence to do anything. Like, if I lose this job today, I don't care. I've got a ton of real estate out there. If one of my deals tanks, which it hasn't yet so far we're killing it, and I love that, and I'm not trying to brag, but I'm excited about it. but our deals are going really, really well so far. So that's awesome. But if something happens there, I have the job here, and it gives me a good sense of balance. It also scratches my entrepreneurial itch, because no matter what, if I was in any job, my mind always is saying, how can I build something? How can I grow something? And that is always the way that I'm always going to think. And having the real estate there and building something on the side that could someday turn into make me way more money, which will make me way more money than here, then that's great too. I mean, that's awesome.
I love that. Well, how can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can shoot me an email at any time. My email is marshall@tigernational.com, or you can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm pretty all over the social media, everything. So my name is Marshall Friedman, Friedman. And yeah, absolutely. Always happy to talk, happy to teach, happy to learn. I can be a student. I can also be a teacher. I'm good for all of it.
I love that. Any final words?
Thank you for listening.
Yes, we have to thank the listeners for listening. And for those of you out there, if you fit one of the three buckets that we're always looking for, we're looking for high-level professionals like Marshall. He was high-level investment banking. If you're in the single-family space and fixing and flipping, and you know multifamily is the right place, if you're in a small business or if you're a multifamily trying to scale, I mean, the power of multifamily and the power of community, it's not just about the education. It's about, number one, we forgot to mention this, the accountability that Marshall actually invested in his education, came down and started doing deals. And then the power of partnerships and the power of growth and the power of being constantly, uncomfortable in the situations and being put out there and making sure that you need to go out and do the work. I think that's what it lends to. So if you're one of those people, I want you to reach out. Go to jakeandgino.com/apply and become another Jake and Gino student. Marshall, thanks a lot for the podcast. It was awesome. I enjoyed it. And, good luck. Congratulations.